And ruthless prioritization includes, how am I ruthlessly prioritizing my family time? How am I ruthlessly prioritizing and making that time that I am at work very efficient and very effective time? And then again, going back to that self-care component. And so you really need to have the trifecta in play. And I believe by doing that, you increase your mental health capacity. You're feeling better. You're feeling more balanced. You're feeling more in alignment.
Top athletes have to dig deep and learn to fight through fatigue and pain to remain at peak performance. But what about the rest of us? How do we continue to perform at our peak to overcome the challenges and obstacles that come at us and without burning out? Today, we will talk with a professional who knows firsthand what it means to lead from the C-suite and handle the demands of running a corporation while also maintaining a full life outside of work. Welcome to the Women's Leadership Today podcast, a feature of Women's Leadership Today. I'm your host, Michelle Myers. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Kimberly Tableman, founder and CEO of Aspero Health. Most of Kimberly's career has focused primarily on technology and pharmaceuticals, during which time she launched several key technology products. In addition to her passion for serving patients first and amplifying their voices to facilitate a positive care journey, Kimberly is also passionate about leading change for women in the workplace and ensuring their voices are heard. Kimberly, welcome, and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Michelle.
All right. Well, to start us off, I'd like to ask you if you could tell us a bit about your professional journey, and then also what compelled you to become an advocate for women in the workforce today.
So I have been in technology for 25 years and pharma for about 15 years. And I started my career in management consulting when I was in the early part of my 20s. And then as I moved throughout my career, I really gravitated towards aligning business strategy with how technology could really enable and empower companies to be most efficient and moving a lot of our business processes forward within industry overall. And my passion for women is multiple fold. I left home when I was very young. And so I had some challenges to overcome in that regard. I also observed a lot throughout my own career and journey as far as women helping each other, supporting each other, or in some cases, the lack thereof. And finally, in 2021, I actually lost a very close friend who was a CEO and founder of another company. And that was really due to what I would call mental health issues and burnout, essentially. Yeah. And so I just have a passion to help and support and help facilitate or be part of the solution for women as we move forward in leadership.
Yeah, I can understand that inspiration. And in your field, are there many women?
So in technology, historically, there have not been. And even for a period of time before I went to Pfizer in my late 20s, I was at ESPN, which was incredibly male dominated, as you can imagine. I was there for a couple of years and in technology. Pharma obviously had more balance, if you will, or, you know, as far as gender equality and equity. But certainly there were still some challenges in the workplace around how women lead versus how men lead, and also a longstanding tradition in history, really, of men helping men. And so that's just one of the observations I've made over the years, and how I've pivoted, or how I begin to speak about it now, is really about how women can help women. And I think historically what I've seen in the early part of my career was a scarcity model. And I would love to see us get to more of a model of abundance, where when we are living in our power, in alignment from the place of our superpowers and what we uniquely are qualified to bring to the table, then everyone around us is successful and we are actually happier and more fulfilled in our lives as well. So that's really kind of the message that I like to share.
Yeah, no, that's great. And that certainly aligns with so much of the messaging that we're here to deliver as well. And it's always interesting to speak with different guests like yourself that come from different industries and backgrounds and how that influences what they are doing for the women's community today. It's some very powerful stories for sure. And I want to shift gears a little bit and kind of get to the crux of our discussion today. And you draw this really neat parallel that I hadn't thought of before. And it's this idea of athletes have to perform at a peak level, right? They have to maintain peak performance. And as professionals, we're expected to do that same. But how do we do that? And so when you draw those parallels, what do you see these two groups having in common?
So I think what's really important to remember is that to perform at the highest level, you have to be taking care of yourself in a holistic way. And elite athletes actually know that. So there's a lot of training that they do. There's a focus on emphasis on sleep. There's a focus and emphasis on what they're eating, what they're putting into their body. And so I see that same type of environment for women in the workplace. So we tend to give and give. Women tend to be the nurturers. That's common in our society. And so we will give a lot. And that's both professionally and personally, but sometimes we can give and give and give to the detriment of ourselves. And so kind of part of the messaging is that women need to put the oxygen mask on themselves first before helping others. And so this idea that we are taking care of ourselves first, we're making sure that we're getting our sleep, we're making sure that we're fueling our bodies properly, we're making sure that we're taking care of our mental health, we're making sure that we're taking those baths or those walks or whatever the things are that allow each individual person to feel centered, that we are spending time and taking time out of our schedule to do that. And that there's no, there's nothing great about saying I'm working all the time and I have zero time at all for myself type of a thing. So I really try to encourage that to actually be the highest level and be high performing, that you take care of yourself to do that. And you will actually be more effective, more productive. And again, I mentioned before, better aligned in your, just even how you feel within yourself as you're performing at work.
Yeah. And I think it's so interesting because in addition to taking care of our bodies, like you were saying, with eating healthy, getting enough sleep, that self-care. Another thing that top athletes often seem to emphasize, perhaps above the rest of us, is the importance of mental strength and resilience. And so how can we maintain mental well-being and ensure that we're not just physically, but also mentally fit for this peak performance?
Making no apologies for taking care of ourselves. And so if that means blocking the calendar to take the walk, you know, during lunchtime, if it means being at, you know, children's games or sporting events, and so you're blocking your calendar. Again, historically, I've seen instances where women and men, frankly, feel guilty about taking that time away from work. But in the end, what I've also observed is that the people that are taking care of themselves in that way, and again, contributing to their own mental health in that way, and not really making, you know, stretching themselves too thin in too many directions, but more looking at how they can, I call it ruthless prioritization, but how they can ruthlessly prioritize their week and their day. And ruthless prioritization includes, how am I ruthlessly prioritizing my family time and whatever that looks like? We know we have all different types of structures of family. How am I ruthlessly prioritizing and making that time that I am at work very efficient and very effective time? And then again, going back to that self-care component. And so you really need to have the trifecta in play. And I believe by doing that, you increase your mental health capacity. You're feeling better. You're feeling more balanced. You're feeling more in alignment. If any one of those three is out of balance, as we all know, we've experienced that at different times in our life, then mental health truly does suffer. We're either not taking care of ourselves, and then we don't feel very good if we're not taking care of ourselves, or if we're not able to be there for our family in a way that's really important to us, then our mental health is going to suffer. And the same if we don't feel like we can bring our best selves to work and perform at our highest at work, then we're also going to suffer in that way. So it's kind of the three-legged stool, if you will, of making sure that you have that in place. And in doing so, what I argue is that you are actually better at work. You're actually more productive. You're actually more engaged when you are doing that specific activity versus, you know, working 100 hours a week or something and feeling like, oh, I'm missing my exercise routine. I'm missing my family time. And that will 100%, and I know we can all agree, lead to burnout. And when you are burned out, you are really struggling and begin to suffer performance issues at work. So the idea is trying to keep that balance in place so that you can really be performing at your highest and best in all these different areas of your life and that you can feel good about it.
Yeah, I agree. I like what you're saying about making self-care a priority, because I agree. I think as women, sort of our default is to feel guilty for taking times for ourselves. But I think the good news is that we are starting to see a shift and real discussions in the workplace about the importance of self-care. And there's, you know, a lot of science behind it, people acknowledging it more in the mainstream. And I think this helps us both in our work life and at home. Are you starting to see this trend in the workplace as well? Or do you think we're sort of lagging behind in that area?
I definitely think that there's some transition. If there was one positive that came out of COVID, there's this idea that you can work remotely. Mm-hmm. And what that has facilitated is the fact that there are some people that are morning people, some people that are night people. Those are based on circadian rhythms. Sure. Those are just who we are individually as people. I happen to be a morning person. So for me to get up in the morning and maybe put in a couple hours of work between 5 and 7 a.m. when my children are still sleeping, it's quiet in the home, I can be very productive. I can get a lot of work done in those hours because for me, that is an ideal time to be working. Mm-hmm. Now, conversely, if I, you know, if somebody asks me to do a task or an activity between 9 and 11 p.m. at night, that is not the time for me to try to have my brain turned on because most of the time I'm in bed between those hours. However, there are other people that are different than me that are flip-flopped where they feel most productive in those hours and they rather sleep in the morning. So And the reason I bring that up is because what I really would like to see as an evolution of the workplace is the idea of results. And that's how I think about, you know, my team and Aspiro, the company that I run, is I just want results. And if that means that, you know, you can get your job done in, you know, 3 hours in the morning and 3 hours, you know, whenever at another part of the day, but you're ultimately getting the results that we need for the company to be successful, I really believe that that's what we should be focused on. I don't think there's any value these days to having people sit at a desk or, you know, be visible for 40 or 50 hours a week if they're not being productive or if they're not getting results. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we're all the way there yet. So I think we have a ways to go with this evolution. But what that opens up is this idea that I'm results oriented, I'm getting my results. And now I would like to go and take a couple weeks and climb Mount Kilimanjaro, or I want to, you know, take a cross country trip across the United States and see something and live, right, and be alive and feel like I'm fully engaged in that way. We should be supporting that as organizations and corporations, because again, I believe that facilitates a more well-rounded, happier, productive person at work. And really that's the goal for all of us, is that we bring our most productive selves to the work environment.
I agree. I like what you're saying. It's about the results and the work. It's not about bodies or hours in seats, right? At the end of the day, it's what is your team delivering?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what about support systems? How important do you think those are? You know, athletes have coaches and families that they can rely on for support systems. And some of us might have mentors in the workplace, but not everyone has that. What role do supports play?
I think support systems are huge. And there was definitely a time in my life when I did not understand how important that community or support system structure was. And because of that, I didn't necessarily invest the time or the energy in that support system. And again, that goes back to, how do we evolve as leaders? How do we think about leadership? How do we create the environment that allows us to be most successful? So again, I felt like in the early part of my career, very much individual contributor, very much results oriented, but it felt like at times the work environment was a bit competitive, you know, even, which isn't a great feeling, because we should all be working together towards a common goal. But then as I've evolved in my career and kind of the more I grow in my own professional career, the more that having that supportive environment around me is absolutely critical to my success. So having people that I can reach out to, and it's not the same person, actually. So, you know, again, I know we've talked about in other circles around board of directors, but the idea is that you need a group of people. You don't always need to reach out to the same person. Sometimes you need, you know, a certain type of advice or a certain type of support. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to be your, you know, I'm a realist and let me just, you know, tell you what I really think. Some people are just going to be that optimist and, hey, you've got this, you know, encouragement, and we need that. You know, there are days that we need that. Some people are going to be those problem solving, intellectual thinkers that can sit and pull apart or tease apart a problem with you and help you think through it that way. Those things that I just mentioned are rarely all in the same person. And even if they were, I would counsel against using one person for all of those roles, because again, the idea is that you get diversity of perspective by having a broader support system around you. With that being said, the onus is on you or on us to cultivate our own support system. It is a relationship, and it has to be a relationship that's built on with reciprocity. And I think, you know, earlier in my career, I saw situations where people would say, I want a mentor. And they thought, oh, well, okay, so I get a mentor and then the mentor is supposed to do all this stuff for me or provide me with a clear path or tell me what to do or whatever it is. And I would submit that these relationships that we form, you know, in our personal and our professional environment, they are truly relationships that have to be cultivated. Time and care and feeding needs to be given to those relationships. And again, I would argue for reciprocity. It's never a one-way street. It's a two-way street. So whereby someone may be supporting you on a given Tuesday, they may call on you to support them on a given Friday. And so it's having that reciprocity. And again, you can do it without, you know, using up all the time that you have in a day as well. You can say, oh, you know what? I've got 15 minutes available. Yes, absolutely. I'm happy to jump on a call with you for 15 minutes on Friday, or, you know, I can do XYZ on Monday. So it's not a free for all. You can have some healthy boundaries around what that looks like, but it still is a two-way street, and there should be reciprocity in those relationships.
It definitely is a two-way relationship. And we've also talked about sometimes you even have to break up, so to speak, if it's not working out on the other side. But and it's almost like dating, isn't it? I mean, you have to do the work, you have to go out, make sure it's a a good fit and put that time into nurturing it, for sure.
Absolutely.
You know, another thing I think we see a lot in athletics is talk about how failures or setbacks are seen as opportunities for growth. That's something that we've heard quite a bit, isn't it? How do you handle professional setbacks, and how do you think they shape our approach to maintaining this idea of peak performance?
Well, I mean, I think if you risk something, you're going to open up the opportunity for failure. So, you know, taking a risk in any environment, and that's in your corporate environment, it's in a, you know, for me, doing a startup is highly risky environment. And I think just being open to the fact that just because you take a risk doesn't always equate to success, but what it does do is you will learn something no matter what. And I talk a little bit too about the time I did not like public speaking at all. I'm still a 52% E and a 48% I, which people don't always guess about me. And so public speaking, it's like, I don't like to be the center of attention. I'm not really stage seeking in that way. However, I knew that it was a skill set that I needed to have. And so I put myself in I took a risk. I took a job where I was doing corporate training, and I was on a stage essentially in front of a classroom of adults from, you know, 4 a.m. or I'm sorry, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Thankfully not 4 a.m. but 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Thursday, where I was, you know, I was the teacher, I was the trainer, I had to manage the classroom, I had to manage a group of individuals, and I had to essentially be on stage. And I tell the story about how I cried about it. You know, I would cry on the way there. I would, you know, I didn't necessarily, it wasn't something that I loved, but it was something that I wanted to get better at. And so I knew the only way to do that was to take a chance and to get out there and do it. And so, and I'm grateful that I did, because now I speak a lot actually in different venues. I speak at women's leadership type conferences. I speak at IT leader events. But I'm grateful because I feel like I can use my voice hopefully to have a positive impact in the world. And I wouldn't feel as comfortable doing that had I not had that training and taken that risk earlier on in my professional life. So I think that's just an example where taking that risk, putting yourself out there, and public speaking is one of those things where the more you do it, the more you put yourself out there, the better you get at it. You can't sidestep that. There's no shortcut. And that's how I think about it as it relates to elite athletes and performance as well, because an elite athlete will tell you there is no scenario where an elite athlete is getting out on the field and just going to go, you know, run 100 meters in, you know, point whatever seconds, right? They are training. They are doing, they're training every day. Serena Williams, another example, right? Top athlete in her chosen field, profession of tennis. And she trained all the time. And there's a lot that's been documented about the amount of training, including all of the other items I talked about, not just being on the tennis court, but how she was treating her body, how she was sleeping, how she was eating, her mental health, how that impacted her when her mental health was challenged. So I think, again, that's where it ties back together with thinking about ourselves in that way.
Yeah. And I think it is so important that we push ourselves outside of our comfort zone, like your example with public speaking. And there's just so many things that we can't learn without doing. You can watch several, you know, YouTube videos on presenting. You can attend programs on how to be a dynamic presenter, which give you some great information and tips to use. But really, the learning comes from doing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And so many things are like that, even, you know, managing people and taking a risk of maybe stepping into that next role where you have to manage people. That takes practice. It's something that you get better with over time, but you have to be willing to take that initial risk as well.
Yeah. And it can be scary to take those risks, but sometimes you just have to take the leap. And if we fail, that's okay. that's okay.
Yes.
Exactly. I think that's something that a lot of people need to learn, that you'll survive it. You'll survive it.
Yes. I've failed 1,000 times. And I think in a way, if you want to grow, you have to be okay with, you know, the wins and the losses or the failures, but just realizing all of it's contributing to the greater good of your overall growth.
Absolutely. And it's all how we look at it. It's if we mess up, I don't even like using the word fail. But if we, you know, make a mistake, things don't go the way we want, we can't look at it from that perspective. We have to reframe how we look at the outcomes.
Exactly.
More opportunities for us to learn. Well, Kimberly, as we start to wrap up today, what advice would you give to other women aiming for that, you know, peak performance in their careers, and also essentially to avoid this burnout that so many of us are faced with?
Yeah, I think that the best advice I can give is not to self-sacrifice and to make sure that women are taking care of themselves. There's no scenario where your health or your mental wellness or anything of that nature is worth any job, truly. Taking care of ourselves, being able to show up as our best selves, and living into our own alignment. And for each person, that's individual, that's unique. What works for one person may not be what works for someone else. So mm-hmm. It's finding that unique combination of this is what works for me, and this is what allows me to feel that I'm able to contribute at my highest and best potential. And so, you know, for some people like me, that's going to bed early. Not everybody, that's not going to be true for everybody. However, I would submit getting those recommended 7 to 8 hours, even if it's, you know, 11 to 7, 12 to whatever, versus me, which is 9 to 5, right? Just thinking it through it that way, making sure, again, as we talked about, surrounding yourself with a support system. You do not want to be isolated, especially as you're moving up or making changes in your career, even if they're lateral moves, having that support system, people that are there for you when there's good days and there's bad days, because the reality is there's always going to be both, no matter what, whatever profession you're in, whatever career you're in, whatever job or job title you have, you're going to have good days and bad days. So making sure you have that support system around you. We talked a little bit about ruthless prioritization. I really believe in that. And when I say ruthless prioritization, when I need to be with my children, I am with my children and I'm 100% present with them. And so again, that's just another piece of discipline that says, if I am taking this time to go and do whatever it is, recently it's been doing driver's ed tests, I'm going to be there and with them and present. I'm not going to be on my phone. I'm not going to be taking meetings. I'm not going to be trying to do calls, you know, while I'm trying to be with my child. It's like, that is a recipe right there for burnout, right? That means I'm trying to do all of it all at one time. And so the idea is staying fully present with whatever that task is. That's why I call it ruthless prioritization, because when I am, you know, with my work task, I'm hyper-focused and 100% present with that task. When I'm with my children, I'm 100% present and focused with my children. And in doing that, it actually gives me peace, because I'm not trying to do, there's not this competing thing going on all the time between the time with them and the time with work. And, you know, I'm sitting here trying to do it all and have every single hat on at the same time. So those are just a few of the things that, you know, I would consider as I'm putting together, thinking about intentionally how I want to build or craft the life that I want to live.
And I think you talked about a really important part of this idea of being present. Because I remember, you know, years back, there was this idea of multitasking, you know, and if you went into a job interview, you wanted to say you were a great multitasker. But we've learned that just doesn't work, because you're doing several things poorly as opposed to one or two things very well. So I'm really happy that there's really this shift from trying to do everything at once, like we're talking about, to being present, whether that's with our family, whether that's for our job, our career, but giving our best selves and really being present in the moment. And then that's also how we get joy from it too, I feel.
Yes, exactly.
Well, Kimberly, well, thank you again for joining us today. I appreciate you taking time to speak with us. And, you know, I think we all strive to operate at our highest level, but we certainly need to do what you call ruthless prioritization, to focus on our own well-being and self-care. So thank you for that message.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'd also like to thank our listeners for joining us today. We release 2 episodes a month available to watch on YouTube, and you can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or really your favorite streaming service. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe, and follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. The Women's Leadership Today podcast is just one feature of the Women's Leadership Today community. We empower women to advance in their career through targeted professional development learning experiences and resources, such as live and on-demand courses, customized training solutions, up-to-date publications, and more. Visit womensleadershiptoday.com to join our community and take your career to the next level. Together, we can empower women everywhere to lead, innovate, and inspire change.